we're going to have enough defense, enough offense in, you know, obviously to create some issues for the opposing team, but not at the expense of us playing fast. And our players are going to know what they're doing. They're going to know what their responsibility is on the field. Really, when we talk about doing their job and maximizing everybody's efforts and talents, if we can just get our guys to play the best that they can play, and we do that as a team, then you know what? We really like our chances.
This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher, and Tony Boselli. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Another exciting hour. Jaguars This Week, Wednesday night before the Super Bowl. Brian Sexton along with John Osher, the senior writer at Jaguars.com. The empty chair belongs to Tony Boselli. He's somewhere in the building, but just has not found the time to join us yet. And, of course, Jeff Lagerman shaking his head across the table there.
He is kind of an empty chair.
Typical Tony.
We don't know whether he'll be here or not tonight, but we know he's in the building. What we do know is that after the quarter-hour break, Gus Bradley will join us. Jaguars' new head coach will join us probably for the rest of the show. So get your thoughts and questions ready. Not that we'll even get to them, because there'll be so much that we'll get to. Quite frankly, we'd love to, but there's just way, way, way too many opportunities for these guys. And so you'll probably want to sit back and just enjoy it. Until then, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Back from Mobile.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Productive?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good week, and it was made even more productive by the fact that David Caldwell and Gus Bradley were there. Had a chance to talk with them about, you know, some of the vision they have for the future of the franchise. And, you know, that was a productive week, and I think readers got a lot out of it.
Absolutely. And next is Combine, and you'll be in Indy when?
The Tuesday before it starts, we'll get there. We'll start with the coverage Wednesday, which I believe is the 20th, 21st, somewhere in there. And we'll be going hard for 5 days from there. And, you know, again, talking to Gus and David and some of the coordinators and some of the prospects. And it's an even more exciting time this year. You know, you don't want the number two pick, but when you have it, then this time of year becomes very pertinent and you're on the minds of a lot of people. So I'll be talking to a lot of draft nicks and people like that about what they think the Jaguars might do at number two.
They let you in there yet? I mean, I know they sold some tickets
into
to
this,
let fans in.
Into this building?
No, no, I think you're here. They let you into the combine building yet? Because it kind of seemed like they were leaning that way.
Yeah, you can go in, and obviously you can do all of the media stuff. And then on Sunday morning, I believe, they let a handful of writers in for about 20 minutes. I actually don't go to that because there's not that much in that period. If they went and you were allowed to view the whole thing, then it'd be worthwhile to go and see the whole thing. As of right now, you're really just going in to see maybe a 20-25 minute period with one position group, better served trying to gather interviews and not trying to talk to people outside the actual event.
It's sure. Amazing how that event has changed over the years.
From what it was?
I mean, now you got...
And TV changed.
I mean, TV changed it, but also just the preparation from the players that attended standpoint,
yeah.
I mean, it's so much different than what it was before.
You mean in terms of the prep? These guys are in Arizona and down in Bradenton at IMG.
Well, now people train for the combine rather than have the combine as part of the process.
Now, I remember, you know, in the late 80s when I went. I mean, it was you trained as if you were training for the upcoming season. You didn't train specifically for a four cone drill, for a vertical jump, for a broad jump. And the bench press repetitions and the 40-yard dash. I mean, nowadays, I mean, they're teaching specifics on every one of those drills and the keys to success and every one, because there's a lot of money riding on all those drills.
And every one of those drills for a certain position group can have a huge impact. I remember a story about Dallas Clark, who I covered in Indy. 04, 05, he was out on the practice field with their strength coach, and he was having him run a cone drill. And Dallas goes, "I know how to run the cone drill. This is what got me in the first round." I mean, and he knew that skill set for his position, for what they wanted, was what had raised him. And, you know, clearly he had worked on that. He was going to be good at it anyway, but there's an awareness among the athletes of this skill, this time, whatever I do here can be a huge impact on draft day. Probably not the same story when you were there, Jeff.
No, I mean, you're talking a tenth of a second could mean the difference nowadays in $1 million. I mean, that's how big
that's
of,
not an
of
exaggeration.
An impact.
You're
no.
exactly right.
I mean, it really could. A tenth of a second
at least
could mean $1 million.
Oh, a tenth in the 40 could mean more than, you know.
No doubt.
Yeah. I mean, more than that can mean
way more
first round to third round.
You're talking, if you're talking about a cornerback, the difference between a 4-5 and a 4-4, it's huge.
Right.
I mean, huge. 4-5, you're considered borderline speed. 4-4 is legitimate top end speed.
How much, 4-6, you're waiting tables. Go ahead.
How much of what they do at the combine now is off the field also, you know, with the personality inventories and the interview process? Because you can do some of that stuff when you do the on-campus workouts. I mean, how much of what the combine is in the classroom?
It's a lot of it. It was always interesting when I would talk to Tony Dungy about this. He would always say he loved the combine, not necessarily for any one specific thing, but he liked going and just observing the players when they didn't know they were being watched, because it is a pressure situation. I talked to Terry McDonough about the same thing last year. You know, guys like going and seeing how these guys perform when they're a little under the pressure, when they're uncomfortable, when they're in a situation they haven't been in before. And a lot of it's staged, but there are times when you're watching that for 48 hours or 72, whenever they're under the gun, they can't stay staged the whole time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people look to see how these guys react to an unusual situation.
I mean, it's funny that when you watch the combine now, when guys run their 40-yard dash time, they've got track shoes on. Yeah, I brought a pair of AstroTurf shoes. I mean, we were on AstroTurf.
Right.
Nowadays, they've got track shoes.
And they've trained in how to run, techniques. Yeah. They've worked with track coaches. I guess because everybody's doing that, you can still compare within that framework and get an idea about who the better athlete is. So now it's a case that when you do that, maybe 15 years ago, if you went and trained with a track guy, you were getting an edge.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're just keeping up.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's what it is. You have to keep up nowadays.
If the four-cone drill, as you were discussing with Dallas Clark, was very important for a defensive lineman, because this team is looking for those.
Four-cone drill is huge.
Okay.
Yeah, change of directions, acceleration, and when you do the 40-yard dash time, you have the splits. You know, you've got 10 seconds, the 20-yard, and then the 40. You know, and it's all, so for a defensive lineman, I mean, that 10-yard time is crucial.
Maybe more important.
Because, I mean, you're playing basically in a 10-yard box. When you're especially a big guy, defensive end, top end speed has an impact, because, you know, once a quarterback gets outside, he's got to have the ability to run things down. But, I mean, it is critical. It's a critical time, and I remember when I was preparing for it, you tried to do some training that was specific towards that drill, and some drills it worked for me and some it didn't. I mean, my bench press reps were absolutely pathetic.
Is that not as important for those guys anymore?
It is.
Because you're just assuming they're all big and strong?
Yeah, and not everybody's all big and strong. You know,
but you get the guys who set the record. Who's the guy that set the record last year? 46.
Don Terry Poe. Was it Poe who set the record?
I don't think it was.
Fifth or sixth round pick.
I want to say the record's right. Like 51. I want to say, and that there's a guy that from Alabama that's thinking that he can beat the record of defensive tackle, and he's looking 50.
I don't think I can beat the record.
I can't. Right. I guess tell you that.
My point was, it was the guy who broke it last year. I don't even know if he ever played. You know what I mean? It's not the biggest indicator of whether a guy can play or not.
But it's a, you know. And the thing that also kind of goes on there, away from what you see on the cameras, you know, the individual one-on-one interviews, the medical evaluation is absolutely critical to a lot of these teams.
That may be actually, Jeff.
That's the most important thing.
The biggest thing that they can get at the combine that's difficult to get anywhere else is it's a great, and again, I mentioned the Colts a couple of times. Bill Polian always used to say the biggest thing that they went and got out of it was the medical, because it was such a good place for a clearinghouse of information.
That's the first and last time I ever had a still shot taken of me without my shirt on.
Do you have it for posterity's
sake? I wish I did, because I was strapping.
If he does say so himself. All right, we're going to take this break. Coach Bradley just walked in with Tony Baselli. Hey, Tony, thanks for joining us. Right, 15 minutes after the show begins. Joe?
Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere, and Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. This portion of Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Fanatics.com.
Thanks, Joe. Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, brought to you by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Baselli's here, Jeff Loggeman, and the new coach, Gus Bradley. Coach, you've been a busy guy for the last couple of weeks. How you doing? How's the process of getting accustomed to being the Jaguars head coach.
It's been great, but you're right. It has been really busy. I mean, just hiring a staff and going to the Senior Bowl and, you know, just finalizing some things here and meeting with our new GM. It's been hectic, but a good kind of hectic.
Averaging maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, maybe?
You know what? The first probably 7 or 8 days, it was, you know, just sleeping in the office. And I think, you know, our secretary said, I think she thought I had over 1,000 texts in the first 2 days after I got the job. So it's hard. You know, you're trying to get back in touch with people. You know, they've been so helpful to you, or, you know, they've got some, maybe they're looking for jobs and you just want to return phone calls. So it took quite a time just to do that.
You feel good about where you're at with the staff? I mean, from what we were trying to figure out, two positions are still open. What is it, tight ends, running backs?
Right.
We can figure.
Yeah, and I think we're in really good shape. That's what I can say there for those two spots right now. They'll be announced later, but yeah, it's really come together really well.
And guys, we talked today. You like the mix on this staff, a mix of guys with a lot of experience, Duffner, Sullivan, and some younger guys without so much NFL experience.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I think it comes down to just looking for really, really good teachers. And, you know, that was my objective. I know before I even went on the interview process after Atlanta game, I talked to Coach Gruen, and he said, you know what, Gus, don't be afraid to, you know, go into the college level. He said, look at what I did in Philadelphia. I had Sean Payton and some of the Callahan, that's mm-hmm. the offensive line coach, came from college, and he said, there's some really good coaches. And he said, I'm not saying you've got to hire college coaches, but don't be afraid to explore into that avenue as well. And we did.
And the next step that was that you had mentioned about, obviously, upon getting hired, was number one, was getting the staff together. Number two was evaluating the roster. You and David both, have you started that process?
Well, you know, I know Dave has, our staff has, that's in place. I'm still, you know, I'll jump in and out of the meetings with the offense and the defense, and we're in the process of evaluating. I know hopefully by the end of next week we're going to all come together with our thoughts on the whole roster.
Coach, you've been a lot of places throughout your coaching career, just left the place in Seattle with Pete Carroll, had a lot of success. And I know head coaches, wherever they go, they kind of pick different things about what their philosophy is going to be as they come into a job. Talk a little bit about your philosophy as you come in as the head coach of the Jaguars.
Well, I think, you know, you're right. I have experienced different things with being at the college level for over 20 years and then the NFL level like I have been and under some really good coaches. And I think you do pick and choose things. And I think it's always been probably, I'm fascinated with consistent winning. And it started in high school, going to the college level, going to North Dakota State, a school that was at the Division II level that was really successful, and just trying to dig and find out how are they winning consistently. And then going to Tampa Bay and being with Coach Gruen, and Coach Kiffin after the Super Bowl years. And, but I really think that my largest growth probably took place when I was in Seattle under Pete Carroll, because he really challenged me. You know, had the opportunity to, you know, get the beliefs of John Wooden, get the beliefs of Coach Carroll and some of the studies that he did. And I think what impacted him the most was that year that he had off between the New England and the Jets and before he took the USC job. He really sat down and wanted to, you know, really challenge himself to say, who am I and what do I want to become and where do I want to take our team? And I think he put that on me when I was in Seattle, too, and said, I want you to explore this, Gus. And we really worked well together and came up with some good things.
How important is the concept you talked about in your press conference when you're introduced? Not worrying about the record, worrying about getting better. That's more than just coach speak for you, isn't it?
It really is. I just think that so many times if a player can just play up to his capabilities, if he can just be coach talk, but if they can just perform up to their capabilities and if everybody could do that on the team, you really like your chances that the end result is going to be in your favor. But there's so many distractions in the NFL. I mean, you walk into a building and the NFL Network's on, the ESPN's on, and all this, you know, self-talk and, you know, the things that you hear where it's really affecting the players. And really, as a coach, you're trying to clear their mind so they can just concentrate on performing. And it is a challenge. But I think there's some things that you can do that can help players get in that direction. And that's why I'm so excited about this team.
One of the things that I obviously learned with Pete Carroll, high energy. I mean, right. if that's one thing that really stands out about Pete is just the energy that he carries into the room that really kind of spreads among the masses. I mean, is that something, obviously, one of the things that we have talked about from people that watch your press conferences, you have that energy.
Well, I think, you know, when – I was with Jim Moore, and we got let go after our first year. You know, Pete decided to interview three of us that were currently on the staff. And I just felt like, I'm sure he probably, you'd have to ask him, but we hit it off. We felt like our philosophies, our personalities, you know, it really meshed. And it did for the times that we were together. And, you know, we were just talking about with Tony. I think, you know, Pete is high energy, really positive. But I don't think that should be confused with that he won't make the tough decisions, you know, because it's all about competition and taking the team to a next level. And, the players there weren't always comfortable, like we talked about.
Is he still dribbling that damn basketball?
Dribbling the basketball, throwing a football all around.
Through the goalpost.
Yeah, that's
every
right.
Every Friday or Saturday.
It's every day now.
Yeah, I'll never forget talking about Pete Carroll. When he was at USC, I took my son to an Auburn football game in Auburn. And Pete had us talk to team, ride the team bus and everything. And used to Tom Coughlin here where everything's so tight. And,
right.
And just different philosophies, both successful. And I'll never forget, I'm on the field with my five-year-old son, and Pete walks out, biggest game, you know, top, you know, huge game, top five teams, and Pete Carroll starts playing catch with my five-year-old son before the football game, and all I can think about is, I'm not sure Tom would be throwing the football right now with the five-year-old before the game.
No, I don't know how many times I stood on the goal line, the end zone, the back of the end zone, and we tried to split the goal post every Saturday. That was like a ritual.
Yeah.
He was just a fun guy, and he made things fun. I mean, we had the home run derby during training camp, bowling during training camp to make a competitive atmosphere. It was
right.
A lot of fun.
Well, I think what we've learned up in Seattle was, you know, we had such a young team. And, hopefully this is the last time we're talking about that team, more about Jacksonville. But one thing that I took from that was that with a young team, you try to get them to play as veterans. And I think it showed, you know, in the Washington game, we were down 14-0. And really our players came out in the second half, and they weren't worried that we were all the way across the United States. They weren't concerned with we were down 14-0. They said, you know what, we just got another opportunity. We got a second half, and let's go do the things that we're capable of doing. And we're not worried about the score. We just trust that if we perform like we're capable, that will, you know, end up in our favor. And that's what was so cool that I thought. That was, it really transformed, and those young guys played like veteran guys.
And you actually, we talked today about this a little bit. You actually came in at halftime of that game, you said, and said, hey, we're just going to get better. I mean, you'd been telling them all year, we got to get better. You came in at halftime of that game and said the same thing, and they bought into it.
Right. You know, I think they just looked at us almost like, okay, now what are we going to do? And, it was just one of those times you said, okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go out there and get better. It's not going to change. That's who we are. And as you guys know in the NFL, consistency is really what guys are looking for. Mm-hmm. Consistency in approach and how you're handled. And it's not one game, this is our approach, another game, this is our approach. And we lose this game and you break boards over your knee. And this game, you know, they just need some consistency. They need to know. And they want the truth. They want the truth and they want to be told the truth. So I think that you got to hold them accountable. You got to demand from them, and there's a new level that's acceptable here, and the players got to understand that, and it's going to be highly competitive, and we'll see what happens.
Being a head coach in the National Football League obviously has huge demands from a time schedule standpoint, and your family. I mean, your family,
right.
You got lots of young kids, and obviously the commitment that's going to be required of you. Is the family excited about coming
here?
Yeah,
very excited. Very excited. We've always approached it that with our kids. It's a new opportunity to meet new people and to really experience a different part of the United States. And we have our fingers crossed, but, at this age, they bought into it. They're excited about it, coming down to Jacksonville. And we lived in Tampa. They really enjoyed that area. And I think, what Jacksonville has to offer, just like we were talking about with the fishing, they're excited about that.
Coach, you can stick with us for another segment?
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Gus Bradley joins us on Jaguars This Week, and we'll be back with more right after this.
All right, Brian, you're getting your Jaguars rewards. Sign up at rewards.jaguars.com to get cash back or credit for future season ticket purchases every time you shop online. All you got to do is use the Jaguars Reward website. That's rewards.jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio. Well, Jaguars fans, you could be rewarded just for being social at the new Jaguars Social League. Sign up, sync your social media platforms at jaguars.com/social league. You earn points for every time you post something Jaguars, and use those points to win great prizes, including a chance to win tickets to the Jaguars game in London.
All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week, live from Jaguars Central at Everbank Field. Brian Sexton along with the usual cast, and of course, Gus Bradley. And I Chris, I just got done reading Tony Dungy's book, Quiet Strength. Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
It's a great read because he talks so much about his influences outside of football. So, I mean, he's talking about basketball coaches and books that he's read. And, you know, these guys were talking with you about your philosophy in the last segment based on some of the coaches you've been with.
Right.
If you look at yourself big picture, who are some of the influences on you personally from outside of the game?
Wow. You know, quite a few. You know, Bill Self, I had a chance to meet. I really enjoyed visiting with him just a small amount of time.
As a Kansas guy, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's right. You know what, though? Gene Stallings, even though he's in football, college football, I remember back in 1993 or 4 when Alabama won the national championship. And I remember going to the national convention, and he challenged. You know, I thought here I was going to this national convention. He was going to speak on quarters coverage, or was it going to be cover 6 or cover 3, and how he won the national championship. And I was sitting in the front row ready to take notes, and he got up, and he said, "I want to talk to you guys about philosophy." I thought, that's the last thing I was wanting to talk about was philosophy. But he did. He challenged us. And he challenged us to really come up with a personal philosophy, something that you could always come back to. You know, if you start to get a little bit out of whack, something to come back to. And it took me a long time now. Back when I was in Fort Lewis, it happened. I wrote it down. And my personal philosophy is to possess a genuine appreciation for the contribution and commitment everyone makes, for together we shall get it done. And I've said that since 1992. I always come back to it. And guess what? When I was at Tampa Bay with Derek Brooks, if you called him right now, he'd say, "Genuine appreciation." Gus, I said, "That's right." And I think that's for everybody. The people that take care of the fields, the cooks. I mean, just have it really heartfelt. And I've always tried to live by that. I'm not there yet, but it's something that I try to work to be. And in 2009, when we got let go by Jim Mora, Pete Carroll asked me in my interview, he said, "Gus, can you give me your personal philosophy in 20 words or less?" That was one of the interview questions. I said, "Heck yeah, man. I've been waiting since 1992.
For someone to ask me this question."
Yeah, and that's, you know, that started off the interview. And I think, you know, when you go back to people that had influence, boy, I mean, what an impactful speech or talk that was by Gene Stallings.
Great coach.
Yes, he was.
And for all those people listening, Fort Lewis is in Durango, Colorado, and
your neck of the woods.
We were laughing about it. And the best story is Gus said when they got hired there, the administration said, "You have 2 years to turn this around, otherwise we're canceling football. Forget about being fired. We're just going to cancel football altogether."
Yeah. How about that, huh? That's great.
Let's talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of people, a lot of fans, obviously excited to see a change in the sense of not just any one particular position, but just winning and getting back to, I can't tell you, and I know all these guys say the same things, is it's a fan base that still goes back to, man, I remember back in the late 90s when we won, we want to win again, and that fan feeling. Talk a little bit about what the fans can expect out of this football team, of a Gus Bradley football team.
Right. You know what, and I've talked to this many times, and I want to stay true to it, and I think as a general philosophy, it really is for us to get better. I really believe that if we go out there and do those things, the results will take care of themselves. So I want it to be known that that's really the direction we want to go. And I think the people out there, you just got to trust if we do that, you're going to like the end results. Okay, now with that being said, I loved Jacksonville back when I was in Tampa, and I can remember Fred Taylor drop-stepping on slot and cutting it back to the
side. I remember that play,
And
77 yards for the win.
That's right, and we also talked about, you know, they come out in I-Pro and they run the bend play that came back to the tight end side, and it was the first time that we saw it, and to this day we call it the Jacksonville belly. And I got a chance to see Fred at the combine last year, and I said, I remember that drop step. I remember the play and the yards rushing against Carolina. We had 2 80-yard runs. It was incredible. And I just remember the atmosphere back then, of the games. And to me, I say this as a compliment, it almost feels collegiate to me. Like it could be a Ann Arbor or a Iowa City or a Gainesville, where they say, "Well, what's the other things going on in Jacksonville?" Well, it's the Jaguars, and let's rally around them and fill that stadium and get excited about it. It feels that like that to me when I was on the interview process, and it feels like that today.
With your coordinators, obviously your defensive philosophy is going to prevail over with Coach Babbage.
Right.
Offensively, Coach Fish.
Right.
Tell people about Coach Fish.
Well, I think he's really innovative. And the part that I liked about Jed in the interview process was we were together in Seattle, and I knew about his philosophy. I knew in good times and bad how his personality was. So I felt really good about that. The part that when he went to college and had to expand, he's got three or four different tempos to come at you with. He can attack you in one back. He can attack you in two back. He can spread you out. And he can do it with different personnel groupings. He can do it with different tempos. And those are all things I know as a defensive coordinator that's tough to deal with. It's really tough. I mean, look at a New England that gets, 88 plays, and they're changing the tempo and, the style of offense and the problems that presents. So that's what I really liked about Jed, is that it's more of an attacking mode of an offense, and it can attack you in different ways.
Defensively, how much of what you did in Seattle comes with you, or do you have to look at personnel first?
The first thing you have to do is look at personnel, and I think that you really got to play to our strengths. Now, obviously, I'm a firm believer in some of the things we did defensively in Seattle just because it was aggressive. And aggressive doesn't mean blitzing 80% of the time. When we're talking about being aggressive, it's read corners or press corners, at the line of scrimmage and not letting receivers get off the line of scrimmage. That's aggressive in styles. And I think things like that, that's what allowed us in Seattle to become, in the top five against the pass and be a top five in defense. If you look back and you say, did you pressure? Well, we did pressure on third downs, and we picked our times to do it, but we really felt like good coverage, good aggressive coverage, and good aggressive techniques, and really keeping it simple for our players, allowed them to play fast, and with that, you get a lot of turnovers.
And it's a philosophy and a scheme that I guess young players can play.
Yes, and that's what we want. We want to have the ability. If you read, we talked about reading Tony Dungy's book. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a big deal with him, was to keep it simple enough to where if you had injuries or, players could step right in and play. And it goes along with what we did in Seattle. Put the rookies in there right away. Keep it simple enough for that. And I think what you find, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but in the NFL, it's really a precision league. And, you can play a lot of different coverages, but quarterbacks nowadays, the Drew Breeses, they have a pretty good idea what you're in. But it's your reaction time. Are you precise in what you do? And then it's a game of just, who can respond faster. And, I think you can keep it simple enough to where you can do that.
Talk about the competitive nature that you believe in. And I know that we talked about it a little bit, but also coming from Seattle, I know Pete's a big believer in that. And Jeff, as we've talked about a number of times, of creating an atmosphere where guys aren't comfortable, and it's about being competitive and,
right,
and letting guys earn their time on the field and what that does.
I think, our central theme of our program is competition. That's it. That's where we're going to base everything off of, is competition, because that's how you get better. And you talked about whether Coach Coughlin, it's that approach, or Pete Carroll, that approach. But when there's strong competition, it doesn't matter what approach.
That's better than coaching anytime. That's
right. That's right. So we have to provide an environment of discomfort with that competition. And we're going to play the best players. And really, we're going to help these players develop and grow in all areas. My hope is at the end of the year, they say, wow, this was an extremely challenging year that we just went through, but probably my most rewarding.
We got one more segment, Coach. Can we get Chang with us?
That's great. Yep.
All right. Gus Bradley is here. We'll take this break.
Well, season ticket owners, the Jaguars Refer a Fan program is designed to put money in your pocket. You're invited to refer friends to become Jaguars multi-year season ticket owners in return for a cash referral fee. For more info when joining the Refer a Fan program, just call the Jaguars ticket office, 904-633-2000, or visit jaguars.com. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls on right here on Jaguars Radio.
All right, welcome back. Ryan Sexton along with John Osher, Tony Boselli, Coach Gus Bradley, and Jeff Loggeman here. Final segment, Jaguars This Week. We've got about 9 minutes left in the show. Coach, you mentioned earlier that, we're about to start talking about this team more,
right,
as opposed,
right,
to your experiences in Seattle. Is there anything about this team, this roster yet, that you feel comfortable telling people about?
Well, I've had a chance. Some guys have come in and visited with me. And just the discussion. And really what I've done is really sat and tried to listen for about 30 seconds, and then I listen to them for 30, and then I get a chance to visit with them. But I really like it, and the whole sense, and just talking to a few of them is, I really like the feeling. I really can sense something happening here, and I want to be a part of that. I don't want to miss out on that. So it's a good start. you know. But as you know, all of us know, it's not the start, it's the finish. And, you know, but the, you'd hope there'd be some excitement in that avenue.
As fans get to know you more, they, obviously you spend more time here in Jacksonville. Tell people about Gus Bradley. I mean, off, away from the football field.
Right.
What do you and the kids and the wife like to do?
Right. You know what? We're probably pretty simple. We like to enjoy our family and have fun, and we like to fish and hunt when there's time. Obviously, you don't get to do it as much as we'd like, but, you know, we just enjoy people. And I probably my biggest area of weakness is probably the balance, you know, to say, all right, guess if your family is extremely important. We know that, and your kids. But I also love football, and I love trying to help people get better, and I think that's, you know, very important to me. So this challenge, I think that would be the biggest challenge for me, is to keep the balance with my family and this team.
Along those same lines, you know, I think we're talking about books. What do you read? I mean, for a lot of people, I mean, because, you know, a lot of people read inspirational books or football based books, but it's kind of job related. But what do you read, you know, casually?
Well, I think you know, I've read a lot of things. You know, John Wooden is great. I really enjoy reading him. We talked about Tony Dungy's latest book. I've not had the opportunity, but I've read a lot of Tony Dungy material. And I think it's just more experience. Zig Ziglar is a guy that I've listened to a lot, because just his approach to life and how he handles you know, difficult situations and handling successful situations. So, but I really have learned a lot from the players I've coached. You know, we talked earlier about Derrick Brooks. You know, I've learned a great deal from him about humility. And, you know, I think Lawyer Malloy, you know, one of the things Lawyer taught me was just, you know, how to practice and how players practice. I remember going up to him on a Wednesday practice, and I said, are you ready to practice today? You know, Lawyer, it's going to be a good, hard practice. And he said, Gus, when that whistle blows, every day is Sunday to me. You know, and I thought, wow, you know, what an approach, what a mindset to go into practice. And I think you just, if you're open and you're willing to listen to rookies as well as veterans, there's a lot to be gained out there.
You mentioned books. Tony likes comic books, but
listen, I haven't said one word about
Dungy. I'm like, what?
I haven't said one thing about your stupid little knee brace that
knee
you
brace
wear around because you have a non-athletic injury.
If you weren't coaching, what would you have done?
That's a great question. Something in athletics, probably athletic administrator, athletic director, you know, probably of a, you know, high school or college. And initially when I was in college, I was going to be an athletic director and live in a northern Minnesota lake and then, you know, go to athletic events and then just fish, you know, ice fish and you know. But once I, you know, had the opportunity to get into coaching, from, you know, then on, those things kind of took back seat.
The accent that you have, I kind of laugh about it, because I got a lot of family from Minnesota, North Dakota, and I'm sitting here thinking, hey, the movie Fargo.
I know. Hey, we either like it or we hate that movie up there.
That's a great movie. Yeah. One of the all-time best.
Hey, no, real quick, back to football. You're bringing a staff together. You've got some guys who are here, some guys who've been around college ball. How do you blend a staff quickly to be able to do your evaluation and trust one another, go to the combine, get going on the program, because you're going to have a mini camp, I imagine, in early April as
a
new coach.
Yep.
How do you get the staff up and running when you're all working together essentially for the first time? Not all of you, but
well,
most
it's
of
a
you.
Great challenge. And as a coach, you know, as you say, what is the leader defined as? And a leader is someone who's defined as you're trying to maximize everybody, maximize your players, maximize the coaches. And that's the position I'm in right now. And I think in the interview process, Shad asked me, he said, Gus, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what? I've had the opportunity to lead 30 guys and 6 coaches. Really, what I want to do is to have the opportunity to lead 90 guys and 18 coaches. That's really what I want to do. And he said, we can make that work. And so that's the process we're in right now. We got a chance to pick these coaches, hand-picked every one of them. The interview process was never short. It was never 10 minutes. It was always 3-4 hours, and then it was make phone calls to find out, you know, how they handle different difficult situations if I didn't know them that well in the first place. But it's really come together. I am really excited about this staff, really excited. And you can tell, even people that we bring in and maybe don't offer a job, that's one of the consistent things they're leaving. They're saying, something's going on here now. You've got a great staff put together, and they're excited about it.
Talk about when you, because you interviewed also for the Philadelphia Eagles job.
Correct.
And so talk about what stood out as you interviewed for this job obviously your goal to be head coach. I mean, so that's
right.
You want to be head coach, but you know, Jacksonville, you get the interview process with Shad, with David, Caldwell, new GM, and walk us through just your impressions and the excitement of coming to Jacksonville.
It was quite an experience. Now, as you know, I'm up in Philadelphia, and I was supposed to interview in Philadelphia, then fly back to Seattle, and they decided to keep me overnight, and then I flew down to Jacksonville. So you talk about trying to eliminate distractions. There's a lot of things going on in my mind. And I came down to Jacksonville, and once I got a chance to meet Dave, we just connected. And I remember Pete telling me, he said, Gus, the connection between the head coach and the GM is something that you can't take lightly. It's very, very important, and it's you have to work at it to establish that relationship. And once I sat down with Dave, it was like we talked the same type of language. We believed in the same principles, even family beliefs. And I thought, wow, this is something here now. How did this happen where we just believe the same things? And then when Shad came in, we got a chance to visit with him. My attention quickly switched, and I said, I don't know, this something's going on here that's really got me intrigued. And then as I learned more about the community, the team, and the direction they want to go, I just felt like our philosophies really matched.
And you had a little bit of a chance, since most people heard from you, to work with David Caldwell. And so now, instead of your initial impression, some thoughts on...
It's been awesome. It's been really good. And I think, you know, I share a lot of ideas with him. I bounce a lot of the things off of David when we talk about staffing. I'll go in there and say, okay, here we're looking at this guy as the assistant defensive back coach. Here's what I'm thinking. Do you have anything to add? And he has some great insight, because really we're all in the people business, and you know, we'll handle the X's and O's, but we're looking for really, really good quality people, good teachers, and yeah, he's been very valuable to me.
About a minute and a half left. How about a thought on London? I mean, did that intrigue you at all as part of the process?
You know, I didn't know it until I think almost the end of the interview that was brought up. I think it's great. I think it's an awesome opportunity. Todd Wash, our defensive line coach, he was on Tampa staff when they went over and played. He thought it was a great experience, and I'm excited. And, you know, really to get the people over in London excited about Jacksonville coming over there.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for our program here this evening. You guys are silent for the last minute? What is that?
Well, I didn't want to step on your feet.
Yeah, I was really looking at Buscelli over there.
just taking my turn.
Taking it all in.
As bus driver.
You're relaxed after
I guess go back from Hawaii.
A couple weeks in Hawaii. Yeah.
No, not a couple weeks, 5 days. But I know me being gone, you guys missed me. It felt like a couple weeks.
Good job on ESPN.
Oh, did you hear me on the ESPN? Yeah. You like that? I got a tweet from you. I appreciate that. You told me to go to bed.
You know what the funny thing is about watching the Pro Bowl? You could have played in that game even now.
No, they actually played harder this year than last year, at least. At least there was a couple guys running around. I'll tell you what, London Fletcher only knows one speed because he was running around. We talked about Earl Thomas. There was about a handful of guys that definitely took the challenge.
The music means
be quiet. I'll keep on talking as long as I want.
Yeah, right, exactly now. When Ed Hockley says, yes, there really are fouls in the Pro Bowl, you know exactly what's going on. Gus, thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, guys. Everyone have a great night. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.